So the United States bears a lot of responsibility for what has happened in Afghanistan, and we should be stepping up as well as with others around the world. Remember, it was a coalition of 40-plus countries that invaded Afghanistan, and we all have a responsibility to help that country get right. What's happening there, you know, what's happening in Ukraine is obviously very awful. We feel for the people of Ukraine, but we can't forget our responsibility to the people of Afghanistan, who are now rated as the highest level of suffering in the world. The Gallup poll said that 94% of Afghans rate themselves as suffering. In fact, most people just want to leave the country because they don't think that the United States is interested in fixing this. Everyone we talked to said the United States and the Afghan authorities, we need them to cooperate. And we need groups like you, civil society people, normal Americans, to come and engage. If we wash our hands of this country and isolate it again, we're just going to be repeating the mistakes of the 1990s. And we all know how that ended.
Medea Benjamin, we just have 10 seconds, but you've heard the repeated description of Vladimir Putin as a war criminal by President Biden. Your thoughts as you come out of Afghanistan in the context of the war in Ukraine?
Unfortunately, the U.S. would not allow the International Criminal Court to even investigate U.S. potential war crimes in Afghanistan, and there were many of them. And the U.S. is not even a party to the International Criminal Court. So it would be nice to have a judgment against those who took us into this war in Afghanistan.
Medea Benjamin, Masouda Soltan, thank you so much.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. The time is 8 a.m. Next up is Wednesday Talk Radio with Paul Roland.
The time that this minister in Indiana claimed that the theme song for Mr. Ed, that old television show about the talking horse, if you played the Mr. Ed theme song backwards, it said, Satan is the source.
Misinformation. Misinformation.
Taking scissors to play. Black folk down in Florida, colored pens and for sexing up the. I'm the someone who knew. They're not telling pre-September. I lean on in the loop to help them unremember.
I was flying on UA-93. That shadow in the footage, it was probably me. I'm the rumor, I'm the doubt, I'm the lie. But you wouldn't stand near me if you didn't want to die. Everything you know is wrong.
Misinformation.
There's a verse missing out of this song.
Misinformation.
Everything you know is wrong. Wrong, 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 wrong.
Thank you. the border. Stole Danny Casolaro's memoirs. Put the acid in the reservoirs. I'm Ron Brown's body on the T43. And I hit those missing WMDs.
All right, good morning, everybody. And that was the inimitable Chumbawamba with the, sardonic take on the sad plight of misinformation and news and ideological distortions that we are just totally immersed in, such that it's sometimes difficult to get our bearings in this crazy, crazy, crazy world we're in. Yes, the English anarchist band, from their Un-Chumbawamba release from 2004. So I guess that's what we're going to be talking about today. We're going to be talking about misinformation. I like to talk about ideology. That's something I've kind of wanted to talk about at some depth for some time. The the hidden ideologies that might frame our thinking without our even knowing it. I'm here by myself. I'm Paul Rule, and this is Wednesday Talk Radio. And hope to engage you in some interesting and lively conversation in the midst of a very dismal real world, to the extent that we're able to perceive it. Yeah, so one thing I've thought about over and over again for quite a while now is, we, whoever we are, however you identify yourself, on the left, progressives, I don't even like that word progressives. The whole idea of progress itself is extremely problematic, another big topic. People who believe in truth, justice, and equality. So, people who don't like war, people who don't like warlike people who don't like bombastic power trippers, people who don't like people don't like injustice. I don't know, whoever we are, we expect people who are doing oppressive and misogynistic and racist things to in effect change or somehow recognize that they're in the wrong, and rightly so. How are we gonna make any good changes in the world unless we're able to admit, people are able to admit that they've done wrong, that slavery was wrong, that white supremacy is wrong, male supremacy is wrong. So if we expect others to change, to realize that they've been wrong, don't we all have to admit the possibility that we're wrong, that something in our mental makeup might be preventing us to see some aspect of reality? I just think that's only fair. So if we open up that door a crack, well then, okay, what might be we be wrong about? I was trying to find an article I came across a while back about the left, climate denialism among liberals or climate denialism on the left. It was very succinct kind of recounting of the ways that liberals or people on the left can be in denial about climate change. And climate change is on my mind. It should be on all of our minds a lot. I don't know if you've come across the, it's been all over the news, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change just issued yet another report, which I'm going to be talking about. Now, how can we know that this report speaks to the truth, that this is not misinformation? Of course, those who are deny that human caused climate change is something real. Excuse me while I adjust this microphone a little bit. There, that's better. Say that we are all wackos who believe that humans have caused climate change, that climate is changing because of humans. Or some people even deny that climate's changing, which is, of course, more and more difficult to deny. But those people who don't want to believe that humans could have caused this, this apocalyptic weight hanging over us, yeah, they say that that it's just not happening, or the humans couldn't have caused it. So I want to bring up an old article from Counterpunch from 2007. Did y'all know that Alexander Coburn actually didn't believe in human-caused climate change? So I think this is a kind of a perfect way to frame this argument, to bring together things I want to talk to today. Ideological distortions, misinformation, climate change. So this article is called "Is Global Warming a Sin?" by Alexander Coburn, whose writing was tremendous, who was a super smart guy, who really contributed a lot to public discourse about so many things, whose analysis of power and the sins of empire were really top-notch. So let me just read this. "In a couple of hundred years, historians will be comparing the frenzies over our supposed human contribution to global warming to the tumults at the latter end of the 10th century as the Christian millennium approached. Then, as now, the doomsters identified human sinfulness as a propulsive factor in the planet's rapid downward slide. Then, as now, a buoyant market throve on fear. Roman Catholic Church was a bank whose capital was secured by the infinite mercy of Christ, Mary, and the saints, and so the Pope could sell indulgences like checks. The sinners established a line of credit against bad behavior and could go on sinning. Today, a world market in carbon credits is in formation. Those whose carbon footprint is small can sell their surplus carbon credits to others less virtuous than themselves. The modern trade is as fantastical as the medieval one." Now, I'll go along with this. The whole idea of carbon trading is absurd and counterproductive. But okay, so yeah, let me just skip a little bit of this, because, you know, his criticisms of carbon trading are totally valid. Anyway, here says, "There is still zero empirical evidence that anthropogenic production of CO2 is making any measurable contribution to the world's present warming trend. The greenhouse fear-mongers rely entirely on unverified, crudely oversimplified computer models to finger mankind's sinful contribution. Devoid of any sustaining scientific basis, carbon trafficking is powered by guilt, credulity, cynicism, and greed, just like the odd indulgences, though at least the latter produced beautiful monuments. By the 16th century, long after the world had sailed safely through the end of the first millennium, Pope Leo X financed the reconstruction of St. Peter's Basilica by offering a planetary indulgence guaranteed to release a soul from purgatory. Now imagine two lines on a piece of graph paper. The first rises to a crest, then slopes sharply down, then levels off and rises slowly once more. The other has no undulations. It rises in a smooth, slowly increasing arc. The first wavy line is the worldwide CO2 tonnage produced by humans burning coal, oil, and natural gas." Anyway, it goes on and on. And he references the IPC, Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. And Anyway, this is a long article, and he writes so beautifully. But I won't give you the whole thing. But this is Alexander Coburn, and I'm convinced that if he were still alive today, he would admit that he was totally wrong. He would, have delved deeper into the science. He would have seen more and more evidence of, just unprecedented heat waves like we had last summer, unprecedented rain events, increased power of hurricanes, floods, fires, you name it. That's just been adding up over the past decade, two decades. I hope so. I hope Alexander Coburn would have been able to admit, that he actually, his own assumptions. Basically, I think he believed that that human beings were just not that significant, that we just didn't have the capability of having such an outsized effect on such vast, vast geophysical systems like the climate. It does seem somewhat counterintuitive that one species can have, but indeed, reality has shown that the human species has been able, through cumulative impact, which is a fundamental concept, to be able to, it's in terms of having a healthy framework to see the world, an empirical framework. It's not just empirical. It's there's some basic concepts that are crucial to have. I mean, cumulative impact. You can only understand cumulative impact through empirical observation over time, but it's kind of an analytical lens. So cumulative impact is just the idea, the fact, the reality that the accretion of things over time, one car burning fossil fuel does X, 50 million cars all over the world does X times 50 million plus, and then cumulative, because it adds up in the atmosphere. That's, that's what the nature of greenhouse gases is. They form this accumulation, this basically like the glass of a greenhouse. They they allow more solar radiation to hit the Earth and to stay in the Earth, to remain trapped here and not be reflected back to the atmosphere. And that gets multiplied by so many other things, like the albedo effect, the reflectiveness of the white ice and snow. When that disappears, you lose that reflectivity, so it more remains trapped here and builds up over time. So that's what happens in a greenhouse, and that's what happens with the greenhouse effect. That's what these gases, especially CO2, carbon dioxide, accumulating in the atmosphere do. So cumulative impact, it happens on climate change. It happens on various kinds of toxic chemicals that build up in water, in the soil, in our tissue, fatty tissues, that go up the food chain, because one animal eats another animal, and then that bioaccumulates, and that goes up the food chain. These are all cumulative impacts, and that's what's happening with climate change. So anyway, so we hope that good old Alexander Coburn would have recognized this, but how many other people don't see, for whatever blinders that we have, don't see, aren't able to connect the dots to see all these interconnected events as having a pattern? Just a question. It looks like we do have a caller. So, oh, not yet. Hold on. Let me, got to go to my Facebook page to communicate with my board operator here. But the number is 503-231-8187. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. We're talking about misinformation. We're talking about ideology, how ideology distorts. And we're talking about climate change. And to talk about this is we have Michael. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Hey, thanks for having me. Yeah, I'm just thinking as I'm listening that as a people, we may want to start to move away from some of the boxed-in labels of liberal and conservative. Because I know for myself, I'm pretty moderate on most issues, but if we go straight to issue-based, I can be pretty liberal on some issues, and I can be fairly conservative on other issues. And when it comes to climate change, you know, there's so many arguments that are based on just misleading arguments that have been out there to begin with. That
such as?
I think. What's that?
Such as?
Well, such as that it really takes a lot more petroleum to produce an electric car than it does, and some of the violations of the other governments around the world and the costs.
But does that impact actual climate change? Does climate change exist or not? Does human cause climate change, is that happening or not?
Well, I would say yes. And an example would be, let's say if someone doesn't believe that, have them lock themselves in a garage with the car running for a while, and they could figure out how much air is in the garage if the car's not running, and how much air is in the breathable air is in the garage when their car is running. And when they see that, they can easily multiply that times vehicles, and then add industry and, you know, all the other things that forest fires seem to be creating that we humans are starting. So yeah, I mean, it's
I'm sorry, I was being a little reactive. I wasn't sure where you're going. So continue your point about the electric vehicles.
Yeah, I've been driving an electric vehicle for about 130,000 miles now, and I have friends that are low information voters that tend to vote against their own best interest that tell me that it just doesn't pan out, that I'm, you know, destroying, using a lot of petroleum to build the car. You know, obviously there's a lot going on in extracting the lithium for the batteries and all of those things. But I do know that, you know, it was costing me $400 or $500 a month in gas costs with my old Jeep. And that thing makes my neighborhood smell. So I know that I'm not doing that. I know that when I run my Leaf in my garage, it's not polluting my specific environment. So I just think a lot of our arguments may be based on misleading information to begin with.
Well, I unfortunately, as I'm often put in the situation when I talk about things that I don't have complete information about, but I think one has to do an analysis, a full analysis of all the inputs. You know, if we're going to completely, first, there's several interconnected issues here. One is, how are we going to, if the goal is to completely change from gas powered to electric powered, if the only way to actually dramatically to do the kind of cutbacks that the IPCC report says, which is basically says we have like a handful, at this point, you know, people have been talking about we have a decade, we have 20 years, people are talking about we have like a handful of years, and we're going to have to make like 10 or 20% cuts in our fossil fuels each year, which like seems ludicrously impossible given the situation we're in. But if that's what it's going to take to completely change over within, say, 5 years, then that's one thing. But if like, you know, a million people out of 500 million people are the only ones that are actually going to change to an electric car, then that's just not going to cut it. So that's one realm of argument. Is the rate that we're actually electrifying our vehicles going to achieve whatever theoretical, you know, threshold is needed to make it? That's one realm of argumentation. And if it's not, then we got to do something different. The other realm of argumentation that people make is that the impact, if you have to look at the total cost, the total carbon cost, or the total whatever, or not just the carbon cost, because people actually make arguments that it's not just climate change that we're facing; it's multiple impacts on the planet, including, you know, in species loss, including water issues, which are all impacted by things like lithium mining, what other mining. So you have to look at the total impact of the production of that car. So those are two different, and I'm not sure I've seen that good an analysis. So I hear what you're saying, and I'm not saying you're making a bad choice. I think the choices that we have seem to be very limited. I'm just saying that I haven't seen it done, a complete analysis of like the individual, the impact of the individual production of the car and the total impact. If we say we went to complete electrification, well, how much lithium mine are we going to need? So what's the impact going to be? How much copper are we going to need? How much, you know, these are, it's easy to sort of talk about, but we need to have some harder research on it.
Yeah, correct. I absolutely agree. And, you know, we never really do find out the cost of subsidies through using our military for, you know, protecting our petroleum interests around the globe. Anyway, I mean, we never really pay for that. I know that if we bring it all the way back to our representation, our elected officials, there are a handful of things that we could do that we're not doing that could really change the landscape in about 3 years as I see it. And I don't know if you want me to tell you a couple of my ideas I have there, if I've taken too much time already.
Well, no, give us one.
Okay, well, one of the first things we could do is just as if we were hiring a CEO on anyone who runs for political office or representative office through an election, you know, background checks, 10 years, financials, statements, maybe not allow anyone, totally disqualify anybody who accepts on their behalf or spends more than 1 year's salary of the position that they're seeking, we'd have really short campaigns. We wouldn't have enough time to really slander the opponent. We'd have only enough time to present our own campaign platform. Something else we could do is establish, and I know a lot of people on your show have said this, you know, instant runoff, preferential ranked voting. The other possible things that we could do, and this is actually something that's probably bigger than us, but we could, for elections, make parties illegal, outlaw parties. We could.
Okay, well, let me just hit those, and I'll thank you for giving your contribution and open up for other callers.
Oh, thank you, man. I absolutely really appreciate your show so much. Okay. Thanks for what you do. Take care.
Yeah, you too. That's Michael, 503-231-8187 is the number. When people start talking about like things like outlawing political parties or even some of the other things, my issue is that the fundamental problem is that we still are in a position where we have we're relatively weak civically in terms of like actually building up the kind of movement power that it would take to effectuate any kind of change. You know, there are certain policy changes, you know, even look at the Green New Deal, which is the sort of the wet dream of a certain major sector of the in climate movement. In order to effectuate these large shifts in, the way transportation works, the way electricity is produced, these really big systems things to sort of start making these shifts that we're talking about towards, you know, so-called renewable energy. I say so-called because there are costs in all these. They're not, you know, they're not 100%. No energy production is like 100%. Doesn't have impact, other subsidiary impacts, or doesn't use fossil fuels, et cetera. There's going to be some fossil fuel use in the production of any material good at this point. There's going to be some environmental cost of any kind of extraction, of any kind of production. It's just, there's going to be subsidiary pollution. So no energy source is like 100% quote clean. Let's just get over those myths for one thing, okay? But we're so still so quote divided. There's still so many ideological differences across this culture, so many, you know, racially based, gender based, various based ideological differences based on, you know, so many different things that we're stuck, we're mired in these impasses, and we don't seem to even be able to develop the kind of militancy or stridency or public presence of the kind of positions we want, despite, you know, these, you know, hundreds of thousands marching for the climate, you know, a few years ago or whatever. The thing hasn't developed, or, you know, the No DAPL movement in North Dakota, which was gained a whole great amount of visibility. Very courageous individual efforts like the valve turners, shutting off the tar sands oil. There's these sort of hit or miss things, basically, but it hasn't, you know, and some of them last for weeks, months, but it hasn't developed the kind of continuity and building upon itself that it takes to really force some kind of greater public action and to bring more people over to the side. So, you know, I went to a rally yesterday, and there was, you know, maybe about 30 people there. It was a very great cause. It was for the getting Wall Street out of Oregon's forests. I believe it's called Campbell Global is a outfit that has bought a lot of timberland. It's a some kind of a hedge fund or some kind of investment company. And they were recently bought by J.P. Morgan. It's like the biggest or one of the top financial institutions in the world, which controls about $30 trillion worth of wealth. And they just bought this Campbell Global, which owns a bunch of, fairly recently bought up a bunch of Oregon timberland. So, you know, now they're just like they speculate on rents. I mean, just like they speculate on bundled mortgages, just like they speculate on rental properties, just like they speculate on these, the internet companies, you know, the .com, they speculate on pension funds. That's what capitalism, financialized capitalism does. Now they're speculating on, and, you know, might have to do with carbon trading, et cetera, et cetera. So anyway, I went to this this protest at Terry Shrunk yesterday. You know, it was a nice event. It's about 30 people. And, you know, I'm not organizing it. What can I criticize? But I didn't hear anybody talk about it in advance on KBOO. Maybe somebody did. That would be good. But, it's going to take a lot more than things like that. You know, there were, there's been protests today, actually. I wanted to read this. There's an event today against the Portland Business Alliance attack on the Portland Clean Energy Fund, you know, which was a very far-sighted event, which, puts a tax on, I think, like 1% of the biggest corporations, I believe. I'm not sure I have that right, in Oregon, and gives it turns the money over to groups that are mainly led by people of color, who are engaged in projects that are helpful towards the goal of climate justice. Is a very far-sighted, extremely important thing that we passed by a ballot measure a few years ago. And now the Portland Business Alliance is attacking climate justice initiatives like this PCEF. And so there's a protest called by the Extinction Rebellion. Local scientists and others are at the Portland Business Office's Portland Business Alliance's office. Let me get the address here. I think it's 's at City Hall. No, it's a short rally outside their office at 121 Southwest 4th. And then a march to City Hall, and that's happening at 4 o'clock this afternoon. And so that's one way to show your support for such things if you want to go there. And anyway, see if we have any more callers. Let's go to Mark. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Good morning, Paul. Thanks for your passion, for your truth-telling. I share your sadness over the lack of a public engagement, public consciousness, kind of a civil society. We've really been so manipulated, so conditioned, as Noam Chomsky wrote in his book Manufacturing Consent. I want to raise two questions. First of all, I uploaded three articles to indiebay.org on the subject of double standards, titled Ukraine and Afghanistan. And the third article is titled Make Villages, Not War, which I think is super exciting, right? We should be, you know, advancing or part of an anti-fascist movement against war that would abolish war and that would abolish authoritarianism. You know, Orwell warned against authoritarianism and said that the past is erased and the erasure is forgotten and the lie becomes truth. I think we're witnessing this. Now, the other point that I was wanted to make was Robert Reich yesterday said that the big oil spent $38 billion last year in stock buybacks, and is planning to spend another $22 billion this year because of Putin. Isn't this incredible? And of course, the government is so inept and inert that it can't close the tax havens or stop the tax avoidance. And the stock buybacks is such an obvious fraud, giving the impression of a strong real economy when it's all just manufactured. What do you think of that? And so we should be able to have a campaign against stock buybacks, against these market destabilizing forces.
There should be, in terms of reformist sort of institutional moves, a tax on financial speculation has been floated. You know, there's all these mechanisms that would start to shift some of that, the vast accumulation of billions and trillions in the hands of relatively few, the financial corporate elite, and start to put it back in the hands of people who could actually, maybe move in a better direction. Then they're certainly taking us off the cliff, and that's very obvious. They think they can, Elon Musk of the world think that they can somehow maybe build a spaceship or a colony on Mars or, whatever insane ideas they're thinking of, or they can somehow maybe, find some place on the earth that's less impacted by climate change. Obviously, there's disease thinking going on at the levels of the people who are controlling the financial system. So those, sure. But again, it gets back to the having the political power and sort of, the big struggle right now is still, there's a struggle within the Democratic Party, between the so-called the progressives, the wing, and the corporate wing or whatever. But the biggest struggle is still between the Republican Party, which is sort of retrenched into this, this last bastion of the Confederacy or whatever the heck they're in. But we can't even muster because they're manipulating they're gerrymandering districts and they're messing with voting rights, etc. That's the big struggle right now that I see, is if we can't even win that battle, then all the other battles lost. If once somehow we've won that battle and we're able to get back to a place where we can start, you know, using this so-called democracy to actually implement some kind of changes that could lead away from an oligarchy and start making some of this, these resources, these financial resources available to doing the kind of things that might be, if you believe in institutional change can actually make any difference right now. I am increasingly skeptical personally.
Well, Musk actually amassed an extra $260 billion during the pandemic. I think Bezos amassed an extra $70 billion. Now, the good news, I think, is that people are finally understanding that neoliberalism is authoritarian, and then that there is a real conflict between democracy and the trickle-down or money out of nothing.
I hope so.
I hope so, yes.
Well, thanks for calling, Mark.
Okay, thank you.
503-231-8187, 503-231-8187, talking about misinformation, talking about ideological distortions. I just sort of want to refer to this. There's a Wikipedia has a entry called Ideological Politics, and it really blew my mind. You know, it started out talking about, you know, they have anarchism, authoritarianism, communitarianism, communism, etc. But then they have these sub genres. I mean, it's got to be over 100 different categories between all the different. I mean, you've got just under anarchism, you've got classical, post-classical, contemporary, opposition, religious variants, regional variants. I wonder who wrote this. Authoritarianism, you got general, other, opposition, religious variants, regional variants, communitarianism, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, and communism, you got Leninism, libertarian, other, opposition. I guess they have some sort of general categories here, so I don't know. Anyway, like I say, who knows who wrote this? And you've got identity politics, age-related rights movements, animal-related rights movements, disability-related rights movements, feminism, LGBT social movements, men's movement, self-determination movements. It just gives me the idea. It's kind of an indication of how just all over the map we really are. And the difficulties, you know, despite the, you know, intersectionalism being the sort of the one of the ideas of the day on the left as a way of crossing some of these, well, basically it was started as a way for, I think it was African-American women seeing how being women and being African-American were, you know, intersectional oppressions. And then it kind of got to be a bigger thing, and to see how all, to view societal power and oppression as being all related in some way. My criticism has been, what is our real analysis of the origins and development of power? And, you know, do people have, you know, I think the people who are in a position of being oppressed in the society by systems of power and by people with privilege and power do have, obviously, a much clearer and intimate perspective on those workings. But do we have a common understanding of the workings of power is what I want to know. And how can we strengthen those common understandings of the workings of power so that we can actually fight financialized capitalism? But anyway, I go on. So let's see who's up next. Looks like we got Kathy. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for talking about climate change, and another good topic as usual, Paul. I wanted to speak to the last caller that was, or I guess maybe I don't know which one you guys were saying, but basically that the upcoming coup attempt by the Republicans is something that is very worrisome, and you know, we need to do what we can to resist it. But the thing is that even if they have all of the wonderful positions that they are struggling so hard to get into, we still have the grassroots, and in fact it's just going to make people want to rebel more. And you know, we are more numerous than they, we are wiser than they, and the thing is that what we know is about nonviolence. Nonviolence is so much more powerful than violence that it's ridiculous. Also, our knowledge of nature in exactly the direction we need to go. As we started out the discussion about, thank you so much for making the point that any method of technical energy is going to extract something from the earth and be damaging to the earth. So the concept, that it's not it needs to be set aside. We need to be very mature about that and use less. Go back to the dreams of the 60s, share, live next to the earth, equal power to minorities and women, but also dignity. Let's hear it for the white male. I mean, I think that's one reason why Trump gets so much power. We never hear maleness and even Caucasians to be celebrated. My God, there's so many wonderful heroes.
I think Caucasian males have been, I think part of the point is they've been overly celebrated, overrepresented in the glorifications and celebrations of in history. But anyway, I get your point, Kathy. I just want to we have the grassroots, we have the numbers. Unfortunately, that doesn't really help much when you've got a turn towards totalitarianism. And we saw with Trump that people saw that, maybe it can happen here. People are, I think we tend to live in our sort of comfortable illusions that things can, that somehow things can sort of right themselves, because we live in a democratic society or whatever. But I think those illusions started to be teetered quite a bit with Trump, when we saw that actually if you're able to successfully manipulate, who knows how far they were actually from overturning the election, on January 6th, if that actually happens and you actually get a true minority rule, look at the Afrikaners, look at very fascist. The grassroots tends to, when you've got domestic military power controlled by domestic military and police and terrorist rule, then all our great ideas about nonviolence and stuff is notwithstanding. You have to reckon with the brute reality of power.
Absolutely. And
that a lot of people have to do on a daily basis, like black and brown people in this country. Anyway,
I can go with you at totally on all those points. However, Paul, at this particular point in history, we still have a lot of power that we need to take the reins of and recognize, instead of saying, oh, well, if they win this next election, they get, whatever, the House, the Senate, maybe even the next time the presidency, whatever. Oh, it's all lost. The sky is falling. I hate that kind of talk.
I never said anything like that. I'm just saying that maybe.
I'm not saying that's what you're saying.
Maybe the whole issue of reform versus revolution, working within the system, doing something different is still an alive debate. That's all I got to say. But anyway, thank you for calling, Kathy. Always good to hear from you. I did want to read a little bit from this article. One last climate warning in new IPCC report, now or never. the world will probably burn through its carbon budget before the Global Climate Panel issues its next update on mitigation. This is from Inside Climate News. Whatever words and phrases the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change may have been parsing late into Sunday night, its new report issued Monday boils down to yet another dire scientific warning. Greenhouse gas emissions need to peak by 2025 to limit, do you hear that, 2025? We are in 2022. Usually, you know, they put it ahead at least 10, 20 years. So it's not like, but you know, it's kind of right in our face. Need to peak by 2025 to limit global warming close to 1.5 degrees Celsius, as targeted by the Paris Agreement, the report says. In a way, it's a final warning. Because at the IPCC's pace, the world most likely will have burned through its carbon budget by the time the panel releases its next climate mitigation report in about 5 or 6 years. Even with the climate clock so close to a deadline, it's not surprising that the IPCC struggled to find consensus during the two-week approval session, said Paul Majdowski, an independent Berlin-based climate policy researcher and activist. The mitigation report may be the most challenging of the three climate assessments that are done every 5 to 7 years under the United States Framework Convention on Climate Change, he said. The first two reports of each IPCC assessment cycle, one on the physical basis of climate science and another about impacts and adaptation, are mostly based on unyielding physics, like how much global temperature goes up for every added increment of CO2 and how fast and high sea level will rise based on that warming. But the mitigation report, which outlines choices society can make to affect the trajectory of climate change, has to reconcile those scientific realities with economic and political assumptions that are not constrained by physics, Majdowski said. Other researchers have described the IPCC report as a mechanism to determine what is politically possible, he added. If those assumptions, for example, about future availability of carbon dioxide removal technology don't materialize, then you are left with illusions, essentially, he said. So yeah, now they are really talking about carbon dioxide removal technology, not just stopping the burning of fossil fuels, which is as illusorily distant as it was 5 to 10 years ago, notwithstanding all the promises of green energy, et cetera. It's still rising. CO2 levels are still going up and up and up and up. And we're still have control by the military-industrial complex. And we're still controlled by corporate lobbying, especially by the fossil fuel and the big financial interests. Essentially, we're still in thrall to financialized capital, which has got us into this mess. And we're still no closer to actually, you know, having some sort of common understanding that that's who we have to go after. And I applaud, you know, the people, these timid steps by the climate movement to start talking about to get Wall Street out of Oregon's forests, which they had a rally about yesterday, and having a rally today. Let's hope they're, you know, I don't know. This is I'm reading from an email I got from 350 PDX. Rally outside the Portland Business Alliance, 121 Southwest Salmon Street, then march to City Hall. That's at 4 p.m. today. And the Portland Business Alliance is attacking the few timid steps that are being taken to rein in their power and to stop putting so much CO2 and other greenhouse gases in the atmosphere. Anyway, so yeah, that's something one could do if one wanted to this afternoon, 4 o'clock at 121 Southwest Salmon Street. Anyway, so I applaud these, but it's just so far from being anywhere near the level of what's actually coming down. I mean, do people really realize how fast things are moving with the climate? I mean, 116 degrees last summer. Anyway, so an unrealistic leap of faith is from Inside Climate News. The contradiction between scientific reality and hopeful political assumptions identified by Majdowski are clear in the new report from the IPCC, which says, on the one hand, that greenhouse emissions need to peak in the next 3 years, while also finding that average annual greenhouse gas emissions from 2010 to 2019 were higher than any previous decade. believing that emissions can peak by 2025 on that trajectory requires an enormous and unrealistic leap of faith. And many climate scientists, including NASA researcher Peter Kalmus, are not buying it. Quote, this IPCC report is absolutely harrowing. Wake up, everyone, Kalmus wrote on Twitter. Brief summary of the new IPCC report. We know what to do. We know how to do it. It requires taking toys away from the rich, and world leaders aren't doing it. Kalmus supports scientist rebellion, researchers who say that climate crisis requires much more drastic action than world leaders have been willing to take so far. The group marked release of the report with scientist-led protests at universities worldwide. University protests are part of a growing wave of activism aimed at disrupting normalcy to try and generate more public awareness of the need for transformative change, according to the Climate Emergency Fund, a non-profit that funds climate protests. Kalmus also focused on how much more carbon dioxide can be emitted before missing the Paris Agreement target. He said there are only about 400 gigatons left in the carbon budget. I'll just interject, which I think is illusory in itself, but that's another bigger topic. And the new report shows that the world is on a path to produce more than twice as much, with projected emissions from energy production, industry, transportation, development, and land use adding up to about 850 gigatons of carbon by 2100. If just the currently planned stuff is built and used, we'll blow past that budget by a factor of two, he said. The numbers are there. The policymakers are completely ignoring them. They're saying, we have to listen to the scientists, but they're not. And actually, they've stopped saying that now. Since Russia invaded Ukraine, the messaging has changed, he added. They are talking about building more fossil fuel infrastructure, he said. The way it's going right now, we're equally dead with Republicans or Democrats. What that says is we need an uprising. This report doesn't quite spell that out, but you only have to read between the lines a little bit. That's an article called One Last Climate Warning, the New IPCC Report, Now or Never, from Inside Climate News. Yes. So, I don't know. I think I've been saying this for a while that we're just not cutting it. Because of our ideological blinders, our privilege in many cases, our just being under the gun and unable to raise our head much above water for a lot of people to even, you know, try to get our head around what's happening. You know, so the people who need to lead this, you know, the people who are really conscious of what's going on, you know, how conscious are they really? I want to know how much are we willing to really take on the issue of a capitalist political economy, which is based upon expansion and extraction and the destruction of social bonds? How much are we willing to really take that on? I guess I'll leave you with that question. Anyway, been interesting. Look forward to talking with you next week. This is Paul Roland with Wednesday Talk Radio. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. Bye.
In Indiana, claimed that the theme song for Mr. Ed, that old television show about the talking horse, if you played the Mr. Ed theme song backwards, it said, Satan is the source.
Misinformation. Misinformation.
Taking scissors to play with the black folk down in Florida. Colored pens and for sexing up the. I'm the someone who knew. They're not telling pre-September. I lean on in the loop to help them unremember. I was flying on UA-93. That shadow in the footage, it was probably me. I'm the rumor, I'm the doubt, I'm the lie. But you wouldn't stand near me if you didn't want to die. Everything you know is wrong.
Misinformation.
There's a verse missing out of this song.
Misinformation.
Everything you know is wrong.
You're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. The time is 8:59 a.m. Next up is Fight the Empire.